show is brought to you by Traeger Grills. Nothing like a good Traeger grilled steak or a Traeger grilled chicken or a Traeger grilled hamburger.
Do you ever Traeger grill breakfast?
Oh, I haven't. That'd be great.
I think that we should bring a Traeger grill here into this very studio. Ooh. One of us shows up a little bit early. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to point any fingers. I'm not going to say who it is. One of us shows up early. They throw on the ham. They throw on the eggs. They throw on the hash browns. They brew up a little OG on the side, fresh squeezed.
Whoa.
And then we get in here for the show. And what do for the next hour and a half? We don't even talk.
We eat.
We just eat. And people watch us.
We feast.
And we go, this is really good ham. This is straight out of a Traeger grill. What about these hash browns, Chris? Well, these are fantastic. I'd love a little ketchup on top, but the cooking is immaculate. That's what we should be doing.
Traeger is so good. You can't screw up. And it tastes so good.
Is it actually true that you can't screw up?
I don't know. I mean, I can't. You probably could.
Like, if I just put a piece of meat into a Traeger, there's an impossibility that it could be screwed up?
No way you can screw that up.
Okay.
There's no way.
That's amazing. That's exactly what I need.
Traeger grill. Everyone go buy one.
I'll go buy one.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I'll go buy one.
I think everyone should buy one. Traeger is my favorite meal.
Traeger is.
I call them meals. Traegers.
I want to stop this show right now and just go and eat off of a Traeger.
Yeah.
And I encourage everybody to do that right now. Don't even listen. Just leave right now. Go Traeger.
I agree. And now, let's Beehive. You are looking alive on a Monday, boys at Monday Boy, are you alive? My name is Clint Betts.
My name is Chris Rall.
So
we made it to another month. Now's not a time for one of your jury speeches. I can already tell you're going to go.
So Chris, before I get to your weekend, I just want to say I've had a really tough time.
I don't even want to hear it. You know, I don't want to hear it on Friday. I don't want to hear it on a Monday. Nobody came on the show to be brought down by, oh, I got things going on in my life and it's so busy and there's a lot of pressure and I didn't even have time to cook a steak on my Traeger. Chris. Nobody wants to hear this story. Here's the story that everybody wants to hear. It's March 1st. We made it to another month. Mm. It's a day of celebration. It's supposed to be, you know, in the mid-40s. You can go out. You can do something outside. This week, it's supposed to get even better as the weather goes along. That's the story we want to start the show with. Not one of these Clint Betts drag you into the abyss type tales.
I got to tell you, life is sad, and it only gets sadder the more you live. Like, the more you go on, the sadder it gets.
Yeah, that's true.
I walk in here today, I'm excited, I'm pumped. Two glasses fall, they break.
Yeah,
and I have to spend the whole show cleaning them up. Pre-show. That's the pre-show. That was my pre-show.
If this show doesn't flow as well as people would like.
That was shocking.
Yeah, if this show doesn't flow as well as people would like, there's a very, very discernible reason. It's that you broke a lot of glasses directly behind me this morning and spent 30 minutes cleaning them up with a broom and a vacuum. Then you lost the broom. There was a lot of problems going on.
So let me just say this. I like to move fast and break things. And I will continue to move fast and break things.
No,
that's my commitment to this show.
A lot of people, they'd be rattled after they broke a bunch of glasses early this morning. But me, that's just another entrepreneurial lesson that I've learned.
It's a lesson. It's really a lesson.
I took my cold shower. I came here. I broke a few things. Yeah, it didn't serve a purpose. Yeah, it actually hurt the show because we didn't have time to talk about what was going on beforehand. But it's fine. You got to move fast and you break things. You worry about everything else later.
So things are going well. And it's March. And the weather's starting to get good. You went to mountains open up in April. So we're
yeah, it's March 1st. Cheer up, dude. You can break 5 more glasses today, and it'll still be a happy time because it's March 1st and the good weather's on its way.
We're a month away from the Uinta Mountains.
We're opening. A month away from the Uinta Mountains opening. I don't even know what that means.
I mean, it's like a Burger King.
It's like a Burger King being unveiled. Uinta Mountains, like, yeah, buy one, get one free April 1st. Come up here. We'll cook you a free breakfast.
All right, let's see what's going on today in the Beehive. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Traeger. Salt Lake Tribune columnist Robert Kirby has retired.
Oh, so all is not well on a March 1st.
Robert Kirby, the Salt Lake Tribune's longtime religion humorist. Religion humorist.
Oh my gosh, we've never heard his description.
Is retiring after 25 years with the paper. He says, you've given me a lot of laughs over the past 26 years, as well as support when I wrote about my wife's cancer, my dad's death, my brother's suicide, and the death of a friend. I can't thank you enough. But it's time for me to go. I'm retiring. I have far more time behind me than I do ahead, and there are other projects I want to pursue.
Well, that was a little Clint Betz-ish. There's a lot less time ahead of me than behind me, but...
That is how I feel.
I mean, thanks to... Like, what's that for?
I mean,
we know he's an older gentleman.
We're all going to die.
We're all dying. I could die today on this show. I could literally drop dead.
That'd be sweet.
it'd be great for the show, dude.
It'd be good for ratings.
Big, good viral moment.
That'd be really
like,
good.
Like, watch ratings. A seemingly healthy 34-year-old man perish talking into a microphone.
So the Tribune's board of directors, of which I'm on, published a farewell on the website thanking him for his personal and... personable observations on Utah's unique culture. Do you have anything to say about Robert Kirby retiring?
So you're on a board that published a statement online thanking him for being funny or doing whatever? Is that what I'm getting out of that?
So this is what we said. Let me read what we said. I don't know. Please continue to support the Salt Lake Tribune. Being informed is important, even if it means that you don't always like what you read.
Wait,
that was Kirby. Oh, wait a second. Let's see here.
That's a pretty good joke.
It's not.
I'm giving props to Kirby going into retirement. Maybe I want him to hang on a little longer.
So this is the statement I put out.
That's honestly the best joke I've heard from him. That was a great joke.
He went out with his A game. He's been holding it.
He really has. He goes, look, for 25 years, you guys have been paying attention and act like this matters. Yeah.
He says, the Tribune's board of directors, of which I'm on, said this. It is not easy to make people laugh. And it's even harder to do so in a one-way medium such as a printed newspaper.
And that's why Robert Kirby failed at these things.
I'm
so we're
sorry,
just giving
you
a quick
think
out.
Stand-up comedy's so hard? Try doing it one way, no audience.
Making people laugh is super hard, and that's really why Robert Kirby didn't do that. But he was employed by our paper for a long time, and we're thankful for that. Is that the statement?
I don't know. It's
you wrote this, dude.
It's a bunch of corporate jargon.
When are we going to get a real statement from the heart, from anybody? That's what I want. As soon as I hear statement, I go, glaze over, PR wrote it, who cares, you know? Like... If you're writing a statement for somebody who's a columnist for your thing for 25 years, I don't want some corporate blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Write an actual heartfelt
write from
statement.
Your heart.
Why is
write
that so much
from
to
your
ask?
Heart.
If I, yep. So, okay, here's a good example. If I work for you for 25 years, we both make there alive, which would defy
unlikely.
Everything we know about statistics, but let's just say, okay? If I got there and then I'm like, I'm going into retirement, I don't got a lot of time left. sorry, it's a little morbid, but you know, I've just been thinking about mortality and a lot of that stuff lately. Anyway, I'm retiring, you know, and then I get this, you go, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, we'll put out a statement on your behalf, Chris. So the next thing I know, I get a statement posted on a website and it goes,
it's
making
not easy
people
to make
laugh
people
is
laugh.
Freaking hard. Chris didn't do that well at it.
It's really not easy to make people laugh. Chris struggled with it.
We congratulate Chris on being alive 25 years after we thought he wouldn't. And we wish him well in his retirement. If I got that kind of statement, I'd be so angry, you know? I want a nice, heartfelt...
Yeah.
I want, like, a poem. I want a short story. Ooh. I want an ode, or I want, like, a... You could even do a dirge, a funeral dirge. Make up some song for me. I don't want a statement. I'm saying that right now on record.
Okay.
I think the Salt Lake Tribune did a disservice to Mr. Kirby. And yes, I call him Mr.
Well, I'll say this to Mr. Kirby. Congratulations on your retirement. Don't you think? Congratulations.
That's as heartfelt as I've ever seen out of you, and I'm not joking.
Congratulations. Get out there. Get out there. Go fishing. Go get the old pole out. Dust it off.
I'll bet if you and Robert Kirby, so you need to retire right now, but I'll bet if you and Robert Kirby became retirement friends, you guys would have a lot in common. Like a lot. Like a couple religious humorists that struggle genuinely to make people laugh.
I really would just like to say to Robert, congratulations.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming. You deserve this.
Thank you. I'll thank you on his behalf.
He deserves it. Good job. Congratulations, Robert Kirby. Really. An institution.
Stop saying it.
Don't you think?
Stop saying it. I'm not going to agree with you.
All right. And the next big news is from the Deseret News. A guy named Jay Evanson, he's a columnist, wrote something, why this Utah lawmaker wants 16-year-olds to vote.
I don't know the premise at all, but I agree with it.
I have a 16-year-old son. He's the biggest idiot.
Yeah, that's why you should vote.
Yeah, let's let him vote. We're all idiots. He says this, a lot of proposed constitutional amendments pop up each year, then die a quiet death. So it's wise not to hyperventilate. However, it is worth noting that one introduced in Congress earlier this month has many similar echoes across the country right now, including in Utah. Echoes sometimes combine to make real noise.
That's, wow.
You like that?
I'm like kind of mesmerized by the writing so far. I forgot this is about 16-year-olds voting. This is the kind of tale that I want in my retirement.
HJRES23, introduced by Representative Grace Meng, Democrat, New York, would lower the nation's voting age to 16, changing the wording of the 26th Amendment, which lowered the age to 18 amid the cacophony of anti-war protests a half a century ago. It has been introduced before, and it has died before.
This is fun. This is a Pulitzer Prize-winning piece of work. Who's Jay Evanson? How can I hire him right now?
A genius.
I have goosebumps. If you could see my arms right now. Oh, my gosh.
Jay Evanson is a genius.
2021 National Book Award winner.
This time, however, Utah lawmakers also are considering HB 338, which, in its present form, would let Utah school districts decide whether to allow people 16 and older to vote in school board elections only.
Wait, okay. I was swept up in the writing, and now I'm catching up for the actual content.
It's HB 338. That's House Bill 338.
House Bill 338, the number 338. Okay, so I get that part.
Take a note of it.
They're saying what 16-year-olds can vote on is who's a school board member?
Mm-hmm.
But nothing else?
So that's just what HB 338 says. HJRES23, introduced by Representative Grace Meng, Democrat, New York, says they vote on everything. So there's two different bills.
I want to lower the age to nothing.
Crazy, you say?
No, I don't. I just said I want it to be, I don't want there to be a voting age. I just said that, Jay.
Crazy, you say? Crazy, you say?
Oh, now you're butchering his fine words. Gosh.
Crazy, you say?
The writing is only as good as the narrator can make them. That's what we've learned.
Well, consider that Utah already allows 17-year-olds to register and vote in primary elections, provided they will turn 18 on or before the general election. What's another year?
That is actually crazy. Jay's speaking to my soul. I was sitting there, I go, 16, yeah, whatever. But wait, I didn't know. You could register when you're 17 if you're going to be 18 when the election happened. That blows my mind.
Then again, when will it end?
Okay, I have a real quick question. Is there anybody who's 17 that's registering in advance of an election so they can go and vote when they're 18? Nobody votes until they're at least like 28. And even then, not everybody really even votes from then on. I'm a great case in point of that. But the idea that these like 17-year-olds, they're all, oh, wait a second. So I'll be legal to vote when I'm 18 and I got to plan in advance? Me, somebody who doesn't even know how to loop my belt through my pants? Yeah, I'm definitely going to go and register with the United States government to ensure that I vote when I'm 18.
Then again, when will it end, Chris?
It's a good question, Jay.
If the voting age becomes 16, could 15-year-olds vote in primaries?
I mean, if we just slip and slide on the slope, what's going to happen next? We're going to have negative 5-year-olds vote? If you're planning on having a kid 5 years in advance, can they vote when they're not even there?
If the voting age becomes 16, could 15-year-olds vote in primaries so long as they turn 16 by the general election? Is a learner's permit good enough to drive yourself to the post office to mail a ballot, provided you have an adult chaperone?
I think you should have learner's permits for voting, and I actually don't mean that as a joke. I think you get a voting learner's permit when you're 14. They teach you, this is a serious civic duty, okay? Sit down and make sure you scribble in the whole box. And if they dick up, they go, that's why you're a learner, you know? That's why we go and have people park in an empty church parking lot over and over and over. It's because if they were parking at Walmart, they'd hit everybody's cars. So now, learner's permit, we have a good way to gauge. Then you have an eligible age. If you've proven yourself.
Somebody goes in, checks Donald Trump. No!
It's just Facebook.
Another year!
I'm more about, I don't care who you vote for. I care about how nice your circle feeling is, which is a skill that you need to learn, you know? That applies to your own tests in school. That'll serve you well
kids
as a high schooler.
Kids really would get bored. They're like, never mind. What's the next TikTok video?
If I were 18, I could scribble this in whole, but bleh, I'm 14.
Joe Biden, great.
I have a quick question about this whole issue. Are people... Is this a real issue that people are fired up about? Like, people are on both sides? Is this just an issue that's talked about like people are fired up, but really nobody cares? Because why would anybody care?
When will it end?
That was the one that shook me to my core, dude.
When will it end?
I started thinking about life, like, in a grander sense. I'm all, when will it all end?
In the 60s, 18-year-olds were being drafted to fight in an unpopular war. The phrase, old enough to fight, old enough to vote, had a certain logic to it. But does old enough to drive, old enough to vote carry the same weight?
Well, I think the better term is older enough to have a learner's permit in one area, old enough to have a learner's permit in another area. I think we should always have learner's permits for everything. Nobody should be granted anything just immediately. Okay? Doesn't matter what you're doing. Like you holding papers right there in your hand, that should be a learner's permit thing.
Yeah.
You know, you get a paper cut or something. Okay, you're 2 years away from having your actual...
I did get cut yesterday.
We don't need to get into that.
I'm not sure.
We don't need to get into that.
Young activists say global climate change is their Vietnam. That's a bit of a stretch. Global climate change will affect everyone, not just high school students. I love that Vietnam only affected high school students.
Jay lost a little bit of brownie points on that one. As soon as I heard that, I go, Jay.
Listen to this part. Young activists say global climate change is their Vietnam. That's a bit of a stretch. Global climate change will affect everyone, not just high school students. Meaning Vietnam only affected American high school students. How crazy is that?
I think that might be a little bit of a swing and a miss from Jay. But again, the writing's been great up until that point, so I'm going to give him a little benefit of the doubt. Maybe that was a late night line, you know, and editors going over it, and they just go, well, whatever, let's just put this out there. Maybe that's what happened there.
But the Utah's bill sponsor, Representative Joel Briscoe, Democrat, Salt Lake City.
Oh,
I love that they give us the party in the city. All right.
Well, I don't want to confuse him with the other Joe Briscoe.
A former high school teacher, Representative Joe Briscoe, who's a former high school teacher, told me not to underestimate the sophistication of young people these days. More than that, he sees a ripple effect to letting kids vote in school board races that would generate greater political awareness in families.
I'm surprised by that because everybody that I talk to says you should underestimate this upcoming generation because they suck. Joe's saying don't underestimate them because they're super sophisticated.
You want to know what I think we don't have enough of? Greater political awareness in families.
How do these 14-year-olds have that? Like, how do you even obtain it? Honestly, what's the measuring stick for it?
This is what Representative Briscoe said. If I'm running for the school board and these kids have the right to vote, I'll be talking to these young people.
Oh, that sounds like hell.
Schools could hold assemblies in which candidates answer questions. My son, Parker. So Fortnite kind of logged me out.
You have $20 so I can buy a character's jeweled crown that'll give him power to go invisible? Representative Briscoe, Democrat, Salt Lake? Yeah, okay. That's going to go well. Who do they think these kids are? Like, I don't say this as a diss on the kids. Now, I was once that age. I was dumb as hell, okay? Like, the idea that I would be sitting there and me and my friends, all my buddies, we're sitting there in an assembly, and we're 14, and some representative shows up, and we're like, coming up with these six sophisticated questions about climate change and how it relates to Vietnam? No, we would do exactly that. NBA Jam backup is Howard Eisley for the Jazz. Do you ever play with him, Representative Joe Briscoe, Democrat Salt Lake? No, that would never happen in a million years. What is this guy talking about? Like, the level of sophistication you would expect from a 14-year-old... It has to be just a blip on the radar to be like, this person's more sophisticated than your average 14-year-old. Because your average 14-year-old literally has no sophistication whatsoever.
Discussions would ensue from the assemblies, Jay says.
Oh, you're going after the jeweled crown too? Oh, wow.
As a result, students and parents would be much more informed about school board races, which tend to glide under the radar of voter awareness.
Yeah, it's because we don't care about them. They don't matter.
At least that's the best case projection. I have trouble getting past the fact that despite all the protests so long ago, people in the 18 to 21 category don't have a stellar record of showing up to vote.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my original point, Jay. Why did he bury that?
A little buried.
Was like six pages in. I thought that's what we were leading with.
They may have hit the mid-50th percentile in turnout last November, giving President Joe Biden a boost. But the nationwide turnout among eligible voters was about 66%. So they're 16% behind.
Lagging behind. Lack of sophistication.
It's also hard to get beyond the question of maturity, life experience, and independence. Could you get sent to your room for a ballot that cancels a parent's vote?
That's badass. That's a great moral quandary.
Parker, who'd you vote for?
Parker, go to your room! This is not a Biden household!
Oh!
Who did you elect for the school board? You were not coming out of that room this whole weekend, sir!
If you look nationwide, you can see this idea rising, not so much as a wave, but as a slow-moving tide that, so far, has ebbed as much as it has flowed. Wow.
I mean, just write the poem already, Jay.
Unbelievable.
Hell yeah.
This guy has the wrong career.
Yeah, he does. And I say that as both a compliment and a diss.
This is how it ends. There is logic to letting kids 16 and up vote in those races. The long-term effects of getting young people excited about voting and giving them real experience seems nothing but good. School board races could use an infusion of genuine interest. It's the stepping stone to a much broader constitutional amendment I'm worried about. That's Jay Evans.
Is that the cliffhanger?
That's the cliffhanger. That's the end.
Gosh. That is a good cliffhanger. I have two real quick thoughts. Number one is the idea that everybody who goes and votes as an adult, like, has this incredible level of sophistication and understanding of issues, especially like a school board member vote. I can assure you, not one person in the United States of America knows anything about a school board vote.
Has Jay met the average American?
Like, does he think that people are sitting at home going, oh my gosh, we got, you know, Billy Bob over here and Jimmy Joe over here, go running for the school board seat, and I got to really dive into what each stands for? And no, they just go and they try to make sure they fill in the circle correctly, because again, that's the only sign of being a sophisticated voter.
I get too bored. I'm like, enough.
Why is this electronic?
Enough. I've had enough.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
It's over. That's it. That's all.
I do think everybody should just vote. Anybody. It doesn't matter the age. You could get 6-year-olds. You get 100-year-olds. It really doesn't matter.
It won't matter.
The idea that we want people to show up and vote, but then not enough people show up and vote, all that means is just expand the age. Either way, whatever. Don't we have a cutoff when it's old people? That would be the one I'm in favor of. Like, you get to be 70 and I go,
that's it.
You can't drive and you can't vote.
Grandma,
stay
go
indoors.
To your room. You stay voted for the wrong
person.
Stay indoors
and play a little more Fortnite. Bond with your grandson more. Come on now.
All right, let's talk sports. Here's No Baller.
Clint, I am stuck inside a hell of our own making. And it has to do with instant replay, okay? Because in most cases, replay is great, you know? Like, good example. You walk in this morning. You walk over and you go, I'm going to have a little water. I'm going to do this or that. Oh, no! I hit these cups. The glasses are falling down. Falls. Breaks. Every time a new cup would shatter, because it was a successional thing. Then the next one falls. And your face on each one, it would go, oh. Oh!
But how?
And then the last one, it was just the tears, like, oh! And so I'm sitting there going, wow, what a moment. If only we had that captured on camera, and we could really hone in on instant replays. Like, if we could get up in your face.
Get in my grill.
The face that people can see right now if you're watching this on video. And you could go in. I'm talking, like, in on the mouth and the eyes. When something traumatic happens, which for you, that was traumatic, and you could get these like reactions on instant replay. It's going slow in 4K. That's really good stuff, you know? National Geographic. You go and you watch a bald eagle soar. And we talked about bald eagles on Friday. Majestic feathers rippling in the wind. Everybody goes, oh, you stand there at attention watching it. And it's a really good experience, right? Mm-hmm. So years ago, sports, they go, oh, people are always mad at our referees because they're humans and they make a bunch of mistakes. And now we got replays coming in, you know, and it seems like technology's advanced enough that we can incorporate replays to make this game way cooler. So, you know, football, baseball, hockey, every sport, they're jumping on board. They're going, this is going to be awesome. We're going to blow people's minds. We're going to create this instant replay system. We'll never get a call wrong ever again. People are going to be watching at home. They're going to be so fired up and happy that the product is just going to be better.
Beautiful.
So there was kind of this like pushing point. Okay, it was in 2012, September 2012, Monday night. It was a Monday night at the Raw household. I had a can of soup. I'm not even joking. I literally remember this. I had a can of soup I was eating. I'd poured it into a plastic container. Again, this is not an exaggeration. I actually do remember this.
Why are you telling us? You poured it. We know you poured it into a container.
I poured a can of Campbell's
soup. Who are you, Jay Evanson?
I really want to set the stage with details to give people a sense of my loss. So it's Packers Seahawks. Packers are my favorite NFL team. Early season game. Again, it's in September, so it's the start of the season. Still a big game for playoff positioning. If you remember at this time, back in 2012, they had replacement refs because they didn't want to pay their normal refs. So everybody's kind of like, oh, this is going to be a little bit weird, but don't worry about it. We've instituted instant replay, and it's going to be awesome because even if these bozos mess up all the time, we can instant replay. It's going to be great. So this game, it's the famous Fail Mary game. Comes down to the very end of the game. The Seahawks are trailing. Russell Wilson throws a Hail Mary on the final play. Comes down into the end zone. Golden Tate, he's shoving people around. Green Bay, they're trying to defend it. It looks like the Green Bay player intercepts the ball. Golden Tate ends up like jumping on him and kind of trying to wrestle the ball, and then they're just both holding it. The Green Bay player possesses it first. Looks like a pretty clear interception. There's the famous photo from this game where one of the refs is signaling a touchdown, saying that the Seahawks caught it, and the other one is signaling touchback, insinuating that Green Bay got it and the game is over, right? So it goes to instant replay. And I got the soup at home, and I'm going, okay, this is freaky. This is weird. I didn't like a lot of tonight. I shouldn't have eaten this soup. It's Campbell's soup. It's not very good. It should be my game time meal. However, despite the shock that I initially had when I saw the touchdown being signaled by the ref, I go, okay, instant replay. This is very clear. It's going to be fine. Green Bay is going to win the game, blah, 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 blah. Goes to instant replay after a huge review. They come out. They go, yeah, it's just a touchdown. We don't. We just really can't even tell, essentially. So this ends up, I'm freaked out, and I'm rattled to no end, okay? This goes on to cost Green Bay home field advantage in the playoffs, but whatever, that's a story for another time. The main point is, this is the first time where I go, this is very weird how upset I am about this game in regards to a referee's call that dwarfs anything I've ever felt prior, okay? In the past, when a referee would miss a call or you'd have all these things, it was frustrating. The game would go on and you go after the game and go, oh, that guy was out of bounds and they missed it or this or that. But it just kind of went away after a while, okay? The problem with instant replay has become two things. Number one, it accentuates missed calls, okay? Sports, unfortunately, there's a lot of gray areas when it comes to making a or calling a penalty or something along those lines. Pass interference in football is a good example. Block charge in basketball is a good example. You can go down the list. Offsides in hockey, that's been hard to do lately. There's a million different instances where if I'm, let's say you and I sit down tonight and we're watching Jazz Pelicans and
Are we going to eat Campbell's soup? Because I'm out. That sounds like hell.
Let's say I get a second can of Campbell's.
I'm not eating chunky
soup.
But
we're eating from the same plastic container. Two spoons. Let's say I'm a huge Pelicans fan and you're a huge Jazz fan, okay? Here, this is a good, like, test scenario. When you watch a basketball game and you are genuinely invested in one of the sides and you're with somebody who's genuinely invested in the other side, and you discuss every single block charge call, you actually understand that it's just viewed through the prism of who you're rooting for. Like, 90% of the time, I'm going to go, yeah, that block or that charge should favor the team I'm rooting for. Very rarely do I just go, that was so blatant that that call should go against my team. So if you extrapolate that to an instant replay scenario, granted the refs aren't coming in with the bias of a fan, but to ask a ref who has already made a call on the court to then go to instant replay, you sit there for 5 minutes. It's
too long.
It hurts your head so bad when you're watching, and it really destroys all of the fun emotional flow that comes from viewing a game. So a ref is now sitting there watching on a slowed down, high definition replay of a block charge that they already called on the court, and they're going, if you truly, like, if you take the entire spectrum of block charges and you cut out the 10% on one side and 10% on the other, everything else is just a matter of opinion. Doesn't matter, okay? So, like, we now have wasted 5 minutes. We still have no idea what our block or a charge is. Again, it's just whatever the ref called on the floor at the time should have stood. That's just, if it sucked, it sucked. Whatever. Pass interference in football, they like, determining what a catch is in football, determining who headhunted who in football and who should be ejected for targeting and who shouldn't, like, all of these things They hurt you watching the game because you just go, I don't want to sit through another 5 minute instant replay. And they're 500 times more infuriating when you get to the end of it and you go, that's weird to watch a pass interference on slow motion replay that it doesn't matter what the call on the field was. If you're a fan of one side, you see one thing. If you're a fan of the other, you see the other thing. It's not going to change anything, right?
You know, one of the weirdest things I've ever seen is in the NBA Finals when LeBron took a charge.
Again, this is game one against the Golden State Warriors.
Golden State Warriors, and they're doing pretty well against like a great Warriors team that's going to swamp them.
This is the J.R. Smith game at the end of regulation when LeBron scored 50.
And they call a charge, like LeBron had taken a charge, and so it was going to be Cleveland ball, and they reviewed it. I haven't seen this before or since. I've never seen him review a charge, ever. It's the first time I've ever seen it. They pull it up for game one of the NBA Finals. And they overturn it and say it was a block, and they got two free throws. That was crazy.
Which was bizarre for many reasons. It was especially bizarre for me, a huge LeBron fan, who I'm watching, and like it very clearly looked like a charge. And so I go, I don't even know why they're reviewing. This is weird. I'm not going to worry about it because they're just going to say it was a charge. They came back, and they're like, oh, it's a block. And it's Golden State ball, and you're shooting free throws. So now I'm just like, ugh. So this is a long-winded way of saying the point of today's No Baller segment. I actually want instant replay to go away completely. I truly do. I think this is one area where like regressing back to the past is so good for sports because everything that I've described, it actually has diminished the viewing experience. Basketball is a very good example. You get into some of these playoff games.
Yeah, it sucks. It takes
and
too
you
long.
Go, it's an instant replay every 30 seconds. And now you're going, was this a goaltend? And was this a block charge? And now Quinn Snyder is challenging this foul call. And now we're looking, oh, is hand actually part of the ball? Well, some people think it isn't. Some. Oh, but did he hit a little bit? We can't determine any of these things on a replay. Mm-hmm. So at that point, just get it out. You know, I say this in all honesty. I was infinitely less frustrated by watching refs make mistakes in real time and living with them than I am in present day when I watch refs make mistake and either compound them or double down on them or just flip-flop to a mistake because instant replay is just really hard to discern what happens.
What about this one? Remember the – I can't even remember who hit it. He was pitching a perfect game or a no-hitter. Somebody in the major leagues.
It was the first base thing. I do know what you're talking about.
And they called this guy safe. It's like a ground out, ninth inning. I think there's two outs. They call this guy safety who's clearly out, and it ruins the perfect game or no-hitter. I think it may have been a perfect game. And it ruins it, which are so rare. And they didn't review it because they couldn't or something.
Well, here's what's strange. I feel like...
I think we should have used instant replay at that point.
The amount of mistakes made is in no way better or worse than it was prior when we had no instant replay. That's my main point. So at that point, we're breaking up the flow of every single game and making things more infuriating for no payoff whatsoever. Right. Like, we're still going through... If you go and watch ESPN every morning, go watch SportsCenter, and they will go over multiple reviews where they go, this is kind of weird where they did this on review, and it seems like it's still probably the wrong call, but we can't really tell. But the main point is we spent 5 minutes trying to discern something that is not discernible.
Can you imagine watching ESPN every morning? Like Max Kellerman?
No, you should watch SportsCenter. You just shouldn't watch anything else on ESPN.
Max Kellerman? Look, oh, I don't think LeBron's good at all. Stephen A's like, I think he's great.
Well, Aaron Rodgers is the worst quarterback I've ever seen.
All right. All right.
That's all I have for you today.
That's all you have.
That's all I have. I think we need to go back to the Stone Age. I really do. I actually am not joking.
Let me ask you a question. Did you shave your beard?
I did shave my beard, yeah.
Looking good. Looking clean.
Thank you. You know,
looking clean.
I figured a new month demands a new Chris Rawl. You know, What's the easiest way to do it? Shave the face, you get a little nice dew, little product.
What?
Yeah, that part I didn't do. I just shaved.
Okay. Now we have an interview that I did with Steve Urquhart. He used to be a representative, a senator. He was doing all this cool stuff. And then he gets out of that and he starts a church all about mushrooms, which is very cool. So we're going to talk to Steve Urquhart. And this is the place. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rags. Steve, thanks so much for coming on the show. I want to talk to you about what you're doing. You're building a church. Why?
let's just jump right into it. Hi, thanks for having me on. Yeah, because I spent most of my life in organized religion, and I started using psychedelics, in particular psilocybin mushrooms, and was having the kinds of experiences that I had been reading about and talking about, and really started to heal, and figured that I would like a lot of people to have this experience. And so I started talking with my wife, started talking with friends, and they're like, oh no, please do not start a church. And that's something I really didn't want to do, didn't aspire to do, but here we are. I mean, I think that it's just something that really can help a lot of people, and I'm all in for that, and all in for building community.
And so you know, in Utah, we're all familiar with, or a lot of us are familiar with why a church exists. It's, you know, to come and worship once a week, usually. There's this community around it. There's this overarching belief or narrative as to how the church came to be. What is yours? What is the cadence? What is the overall, this is why we gather?
Yeah, I think it's the exact same story, but, you know, a slight variation on it. I mean, we do believe that we have the ability to commune with the divine, and we do want to do that as a community where we can support and nurture each other. So that's like any other church. The difference being that we think our sacrament actually allows us to commune directly with the divine. I mean, it's an active sacrament, and in that space, which I call the Holy of Holies, we can receive direct guidance for our lives. And we really can do some serious work toward, you know, worship means to find our worthiness. That's what the word means. And so I believe that we can do this in psychedelic experiences, and then we can carry that forward. It's not like we just have these experiences through psychedelics. It's kind of like training wheels, where we can learn what this space feels like and then access it through meditation, through prayer, through song, through conversation.
What do you mean when you say communicating with the divine? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's the great question. And I have to say, I don't know. And I don't think it is knowable. So for me, what it means is I go to this mystical state of consciousness. And again, that can be with psilocybin mushrooms, or it can just be listening to music, or, you know, meditating, praying, doing other activities. And in that space, I think that's where the divine exists. And so to your question, what is the divine? I don't know. Is it something that is out there in the universe, external to us? Is it our subconscious, and is it our connection with each other? I think it might be a little bit of each of those. I tend to think more that, again, worship, finding our worthiness, means that it is something within. And I find great power in that, that the creative visions I get, the noble thoughts I get, the healing direction I get, that it comes from me, that I'm not dependent upon some external force. There's not an intermediary between me and divinity. It's right here that I can tap into it, and I can become more and more divine myself. And let me give you this part where the name comes from. The 82nd Psalms, it says that God met with the gods in a divine assembly. Which, isn't that fascinating? I mean, this is the book that spawned two, maybe three, depending on how you count, you know, major monotheistic religions. And yet here's something where God meets with the gods. And so basically what he says in the 82nd Psalm is just be better, stop being jerks, be kind and good to people who need it. And I took the inspiration from that I do happen to believe that you're a God, I'm a God. There are 8 billion gods walking this earth. And I remind myself that when I'm driving in traffic, that this is some crazy God ahead of me. But I really do believe that we are these noble, amazing beasts. And we can just do miraculous things if we tap into our own divinity.
And how did you get to forming your own church? As I understand it, you were a state senator, right? You were in the legislature. You were in that for a number of years. You were a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And again, correct me if I'm wrong about any of this. And you were a state senator. And then what leads you on this journey to where you are today?
So I grew up in Houston, and you know, my family was a mudded family. We struggled with various things, and we found the Mormon Church when I was 10 years old, and thank God for that. What a great organization in so many ways, and to have really good adults paying attention to me and my brother, that was awesome. And so I have a tender spot in my heart for the Mormon Church. I love it in so many ways. In some ways, I think it stunted my spiritual growth. You know, when I was 10 years old, I was handed an answer key, and I just don't think it's a real answer key. I think it's a way to kind of keep from asking some important questions. I mean, I think we should walk this earth thinking, who am I? What is this universe? Is someone in charge of this universe? Could I be in charge of some part of this universe? And why am I here? What does this all matter? And you don't ask those questions once you are handed the answer key. And so, you know, the answers I was given as a 10-year-old boy, they worked less and less for me in my life. And so, you know, when I was about, 40s, I just stopped believing in the doctrine of the Mormon Church and figured, okay, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in anything other than we live, we die. And then right after I got out of the legislature, my wife and I, we found psychedelics. We had a phenomenal first experience, and we decided, wow, this is something we need to investigate. And through that investigation, here we are with the Divine Assembly.
Can you tell me about that first experience, what it was like, your first experience with psychedelics?
Yeah, so we first limped into that experience. You know, we were really struggling as individuals and as a couple. When I was in the Senate, you know, I left my faith, and I guess I had never developed much of a moral or ethical compass. I had the answer key, like I said, I'd been checking boxes. And when I ripped up that answer key, I didn't know really what I should be doing. And so I did a lot of bad, stupid things, and that hurt me and hurt our marriage, hurt Sarah. And, you know, she had, you know, you collect some trauma as you go along. So she had some issues too. And we went in there really wanting, needing to heal. And we did. She went in with a checklist. That's just who she is. She's methodical that way. And she kind of got answers. She had five things, a checklist. And me, I wanted, you know, the full mystical experience. And I hung out with the madre who, you know, when you do ayahuasca, that's the maternal spirit of the plant. And just really had this incredible creative experience and just started to see myself as a different being, that I have these creative capacities that I haven't really tapped into. And that was the start of a wonderful journey of just seeing myself differently.
How would somebody know whether or not psychedelics are for them, whether it's worth pursuing the path that you've pursued and joining your church? And, you know, I know that guides are very important in this and making sure you have the right guide, but how do you know? I mean, how does a person know whether or not psychedelics is the path for them?
The start of just about anything we do as humans should be research and conversation. Because psychedelics are a Schedule I substance, it makes some of those conversations difficult. You know, my wife and I, before we did ayahuasca, we did our Google research, right? Can ayahuasca kill us? Will ayahuasca make us brain dead? Or, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And that's a big part of what we want to do with the Divine Assembly, is form a community of people who have used psilocybin mushrooms and enjoy them, but then also people who are interested in it, and also some people who figure they're never going to do it, but they want community, because we want a conversation to where people are like, I've heard about these, what's it about? We can have open conversations. I don't think anyone should be forced, compelled, pushed at all to do psychedelics. I think that psychedelics kind of speak to them, like it did me and my wife, where, hey, for some reason, we're both interested in this. And that's what we want with the Divine Assembly, is these things can perform miracles for a lot of folks. And even medical science would agree with that. This is looking to be curative in many situations for depression, that we don't have any other cure. We have some, you know, things to treat symptoms. And so I think if people are curious, there are a lot of great resources out there. MAPS is a good organization, Chacruna. You know, my friend Brian Murarescu wrote a great book, The Immortality Key. Michael Pollan, his book, How to Change Your Mind, is fantastic. Just read, talk with people. If anyone's interested, I spend most of my days now on the phone or on Zoom talking with people about how they might look into this. But I don't ever pressure anyone. I just think people will know when it's time.
How has the Divine Assembly navigated the pandemic? How has it changed what you thought you were building once this all hit?
Yeah, so I started getting this idea for a church. And so I called a great lawyer, constitutional scholar, and I told him about this. I said, hey, having these experiences, if there's anything about truly religious, this feels like it. And so he said, tell me at the end of this overlong windup, you're going to ask me to be your lawyer. And so we set up the Divine Assembly, got it going in June, which we were thinking, okay, you know, hopefully the pandemic ends in a month or two, and here we are. So it's been frustrating that we haven't been able to have big gatherings, but it's also forced creativity. I'm sure that your folks at Silicon Slopes are seeing this every single day, is because we can't do things one way, we have to figure out another. And what we kind of figured is, okay, we're based on psychedelic mushrooms. Let's grow like the mushrooms do. And mushrooms underground, there's this mycelial network that goes everywhere. And the mushrooms, just, they're little parts of that. They're just flower fruit up above. So we've been gathering via Twitch TV, where we have these little nodes that meet in different houses. That can be one person or it can be 10 people. And then we come together on Twitch TV, all the different nodes. And that's been interesting. It's been great. But humans are meant to connect in person too. And we're excited about some upcoming events. The big one is on the summer equinox. Sorry, the summer solstice, June 18 through 20, we're going to be camping. We're going to gather probably out toward Grantsville, and we're making preparations for that and getting very excited.
How does someone become a member of the Divine Assembly?
Easy. TheDivineAssembly.org is our website. People just give name and email. And a new name is a venerable religious tradition. So if people feel uncomfortable about that, they can make up a name, make up an email. That's a way that they get on the mailing list and know what we're doing and can participate in the community. But we want all of our thresholds to join, to belong, to be pretty minor. So joining, we don't want an elaborate process on that. And then also our doctrine, we have one tenet, which is we believe that we can commune with the divine through the psilocybin sacrament. And because that is our one tenet, we don't really need a bunch of others. We don't need a lot of doctrine. remember, I come from Mormonism, which is dogmatic, it's hierarchical, and I just don't want that. I don't think we need that. So since people can commune directly with the divine in the Holy of Holies, they can figure it out directly with the divine, what their course is, and they'll, some doors will be open, some pathways. They can talk with integration therapists and get the help and guidance they need to take care of their lives in the way that's most appropriate for them.
My last question for you is the importance of guides. How important is a guide when you're going through this experience?
Very, 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 very. Especially if people are starting out. Remember, the point of this stuff is to put you in a different state of consciousness, an abnormal state of consciousness. And if you've never been there before, that can be scary as hell. And you'll encounter different things. And why would you want to do that alone? And, you know, for me now, I love all of the different bizarre things I encounter because I'm familiar with the space. And I'm just like, oh, wow, you're different. What do you have to teach me? But if you've never done it before, oh my gosh, that can be so scary. And so a guide can help you process things. I mean, I've been doing psychedelics for 2-3 years when I encountered this phenomenal guide who on night three said, why aren't you asking me any questions? Am I doing something wrong? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. I just didn't want to bug you. He said, that's what guides do. He said, would you like to talk about anything? And then, oh my gosh. After that, it was amazing the experiences I had because he knew more than I did and was able to help open some doors. So I think guides are very important. Even now, I love just doing some psilocybin in my bedroom where it's just me. It's just me and the divine. We're going to hash some things out. We're going to figure some things out. But I still make sure that Sarah is home and knows that I'm doing it. In case I get scared or get a little lost, I can call out to her and she can just come sit with me. And, you know, that's happened more than once that the plan is to be alone. And I've called out to her and she's just come and sat with me and just held my hand for a while I got through the scary stuff to get to the miraculous, marvelous stuff.
Steve, thank you so much for coming on. What you're doing is yeah, please. And I also want you to tell people how they learn about this event you're doing and how they get involved if they want to.
Yeah, thank you. So let's start with the event. People can find out on thedivineassembly.org. We're still putting together the pieces of that. We think it's going to be a spectacular event. And then, you know, I just wanted to add that if anyone is interested, hit me up on Facebook, and I don't guide myself. So it's not like I'd say, here I am, I'm going to help you out. Because honestly, I don't think I don't have the skill. I don't know if I'll ever have the skill. You know, I'll guide some friends who've done it a bit, and I call myself the budget shaman, and I remind them you're getting what you're paying for, which is nothing. What I am is a lawyer, and so I'm trying to create something that is legally sound and safe on which gifted guides can help people. Integration therapists can help people. So I know who these folks are. I can hook you up with the right people who can make sure that do their best that you encounter the divine, that the right doors are open, that you can heal and you can improve and figure out how to love even more and enjoy life even more.
Steve, I know you don't consider yourself a prophet, but you've got yourself a very prophetic beard going on here, and it's really working, my friend. You're looking great.
I know. I love the beard. It is, at some point, it's gonna become a little cliche, but yeah, for now, I'm loving it.
Keep it going. Thanks so much, Steve. I'm sure we'll talk to you again down the road. If you want to learn more, go to thedivineassembly.org or hit Steve up on Facebook. Thank you so much, Steve.
Perfect. Hey, thank you. Best to you.
Likewise.
Are going to that festival, are we not, Chris?
I can assure you I'll be there at the festival. I will be front and center. We will have a large RV with us. We'll be doing everything under the sun, dude. I can't assure that, but we will. Of course we'll be there.
We'll be there. The DivineAssembly.org. Fascinating guy, this Steve Urquhart.
Yeah, oh, yes.
He's a prophet.
He, well, yeah.
I consider him a prophet. I know he doesn't consider himself a prophet, but I consider him a prophet.
Now that I think about it, I do too. And you were right about the beard at the very end. The beard is what makes the prophet.
Yeah.
If you were looking like me, it doesn't matter how good your prophecies are. You know, I could predict everything for the next 100 years and everybody'd go, there's something a little off. There's got to be the free flowing wisdom off the chin.
You know, earlier in the show, I complimented you for the shave. Now I take it back.
Well, no, I'm not trying to posit myself as a prophet. I'm a follower. I've said it many times in the show. I'm a sheep.
Yeah, you're sheep.
I'll walk off the cliff. Just tell me where. Somebody with a beard, tell me where to go.
All right. And now, traffic and weather.
What do you guys know about Hiawatha, Utah?
I know absolutely nothing, but I'm hoping that you have some stats to tell me what is going on in Hiawatha.
It's in Carbon County.
Carbon County's a badass county. Clint Betts' favorite county, actually.
Hiawatha! That's what I call it.
Whenever he does a voice, just speak over and don't acknowledge it. As soon as you acknowledge it, he does it more. You gotta just continue speaking.
Hiawatha!
It's a coal mining town.
Yeah, I know that.
How close is it to Price?
I don't know.
Oh, cool.
Oh, sure. She's good at the weather, but not a geographer.
How close is it?
Don't do that.
Now you understand my plight. You can't acknowledge it. You're giving it the time of day. This is the problem, Kelly. You just don't acknowledge it. Look over here. Speak to me. Don't acknowledge what's going on.
How many people do you think live in Hiawatha, Utah?
I would guess 35.
That's pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah. 43.
That is pretty good.
That was almost spot on.
What kind of weather do we got there today?
Well, it's sunny.
Okay.
You like how I'm not even acknowledging him?
No, when he comes back with the normal voice, see, now you just ignore again.
Okay.
It's easy.
Well, it's 17 degrees.
17 degrees is not golfable.
No.
Are they going to be able to golf at any point this day?
Can't golf in Hiawatha.
It gets up to 39.
Are they going to be able to go and golf in Price? Price has a golf course.
I think so. It's sunny.
We better get out of this segment. I'm not even joking. Just cut it. Everybody cut the segment.
I can't hear myself think.
Literally end the segment. End the segment now.
Hiawatha, what is it?
It doesn't matter. End the segment. I'm not even.
You did great.
End everything.
Thank you.
End everything.
You did great. Thank you for coming on.
You bet.
And now, why though?
Mondays are a very special day all around at all times. The number one reason that Mondays are special, Clint, is because every time we come to the Why Though segment, which is the greatest of all segments in the history of segments, Monday is a celebration of country music, you know? We coined a term, it's called Country Music Monday. The woman who was just here, her name's Kelly Jensen. She's a part-time weather woman. She's a part-time producer. She's a full-time country music correspondent. Mm-hmm. So every Monday, she gets country music song together. She goes, these lyrics are going to be good to discuss on the air. She sends them over to you. And then for this segment, we read them on air and we dissect them. So today, Country Music Monday, what do you got?
Brad Paisley, very attractive man, first of all, does very well. As a musician, okay. Successful.
Okay.
Multiple platinum records, probably. Maybe even double platinum.
If I'm not mistaken, we've done Brad Paisley before, but I can't call to mind what we talked about.
Brad Paisley, very attractive, very a superstar.
Is he a funny
country
man?
Music superstar, oh. And very, very funny.
So I'm getting a picture here behind you on the screen.
He is very funny.
He is the funny man. That's exactly who he is. He's got...
Take a look at him.
He's got a
Drink
striking similarity to
Drink
you.
Him in.
I'm not even joking. He actually looks...
Drink him in.
He looks like you. It's disgusting. Both of you guys look pretty similar.
Drink him
in. If you
in.
Cleaned up the bottom part of your beard
Which
and just had the mustache... Well, yeah. If you just did that, you would actually look pretty close to Brad Paisley.
His wife, interestingly, go back to that shot. His wife is the actress from Father of the Bride.
I don't know what that is. And that's not interesting to me.
You find that fascinating?
Is that like a way of giving yourself hope? Like maybe you can marry a celebrity someday or
his
what?
His wife... Oh, that does look like me. Fascinating.
What's okay. fascinating is when a big star...
I look hot. Like Brad Paisley.
You look like Brad Paisley. I don't know if I...
All right. Old Brad boy. Brad P, as I call him. Brad P put out a song called Online. Hit song. Big song. One of the bigger songs.
It sounds pretty recent then, if it's called Online.
It's called Online, but I don't think it's that recent. All right, here we go. I work down at the pizza pit, and I drive an old Hyundai. Is that how you say it?
Yes. Absolutely. You're doing well, Brad.
I still live with my mom and dad. I'm 5'3 and overweight. I should.
This is my story.
I should.
What the hell? Where are my royalties? This is not an exaggeration. When I was in high school, I worked at a pizza place. I was 5'7" and I was overweight. Thanks for bringing it up, Brad. And so now I hear these opening lyrics and I go, yeah, I was living at my parents' place too. I couldn't go out on my own. Sorry. I was 16 years old. I was trying to make a living, dude. Yeah, I was overweight. How many times does he have to say it?
So I should point out here that Brad Paisley is funny.
Oh. Okay.
Like he's a comedian.
Okay, okay.
In addition to being a country music star.
So I just need to listen to this like it's a Robert Kirby column and I'll be good.
I'm a sci-fi fanatic, mild asthmatic, never been to second base. But there's a whole nother me that you need to see. Go check out MySpace. So it's old.
Oh my gosh.
Give you a sense.
I hate that Brad Paisley's throwing me personally and others like me under the bus.
You're a mild asthmatic.
Listen, sometimes I got problems breathing.
You've never been to second base.
I don't blame asthma. It's because second
You're a sci-fi
base,
fan.
I haven't even gotten to the batter's box. I'm still in the dugout. Somebody call me up. At least put me on deck. You know, I can go do the swing with the weights on. At least give me something.
Because online, I'm out in Hollywood. I'm 6'5", and I look damn good. If I was saying that, I'd say D good.
But it's okay. You can quote. You can quote.
I drive a Maserati, I'm a black belt in karate, and I love a good glass of wine.
This person doesn't sound cool at all.
It turns girls on that I'm mysterious. I tell them I don't want nothing serious, because even on a slow day, I can have a three-way chat with two women at one time.
So, okay, a lot to take in there on that last thing.
Have you ever chatted with two women at one time?
No. How would I even do that? It's so hard to chat with one person at a time. Much less...
Slack? Group chat.
Okay.
I've done it. I've actually done it. Group chat.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'm just not using the correct technological platforms. For me, a big in-person interactor, it's hard when you start expanding beyond the one-on-one, you know? Mm. So, oh, yeah, I'm in MySpace, and I know karate, and I drink wine. Are those cool stats? Like, if somebody said, say something cool about you, and I go, I drink a glass of wine every night, would you think that's cool?
I actually would. Okay. I would be like, man.
Go, wow.
An alcoholic. Huh?
Kind of seeing you in a different light, dude. This is cool.
Mysterious.
What else you got going on? I drive a Maserati. What's a Maserati? Is it just a better Mazda?
I don't know what a Maserati is.
I don't even think it's that cool of a car. It's just a knockoff Mazda.
Yeah, I don't think it's that cool. So it continues. I'm so much cooler online. So much cooler online. I get home. I kiss my mom and she fixes me a snack. I head down to my basement bedroom and fire up my Mac. In real life, the only time I ever been to L.A. was when I got the chance with the marching band to play tuba in the Rose Parade. That's you.
Why is he pissing all over these people's
That's
choices
you.
When they were young?
Tuba player.
I don't
over
like
here.
This. Oh, he's trying to be some funny man. You know who's the big loser? The guy who goes home and kisses his mom, who shows his love for her. And oh, she makes him a snack because she's trying to care for him. She's a little bit worried that he's just this weird
overweight
guy who's downstairs online going like, Mom, I'm having a three-way chat right now.
You know
she
what?
Goes, just eat your peanut butter sandwich, dude.
I'm not as approving of the mom. She knows he's overweight. She does not need to give him a snack. I'm not
an
as
enabler.
She enables.
Well,
she enables his habits.
See, now we're getting on the mom's case, and we have no knowledge of what the snack is. In my mind, the snack was
healthy.
Here's some
carrots.
Carrot sticks, no ranch. I want to see you eat them before you go downstairs. And no, you can't take those spicy Dorito nacho cheese chips downstairs with you.
Yeah.
Leave them up here. Those are for the family.
Online, I live in Malibu. I pose for Calvin Klein. I've been in GQ. I'm single and I'm rich, and I got a set of six-pack abs that'll blow your mind.
I'll bet that paragraph resonated with you. You started thinking of some dude in Malibu with the six pack who is single, and you go, just, I mean, wow. How do I meet those kind of people?
If I could hang around a guy like that for one day, do you imagine that would be life-changing?
It would be.
That would be life-changing.
No, it would be the worst experience of your life because it would be impossible to be that person. Here are the stats we know. Six pack, lives in Malibu, drives a Maserati, drinks a glass of wine, super hot, single. It's impossible to hang around with that person, not just be belittled at all times. Like me, the frumpy overweight dude whose mom feeds him carrot sticks to try to make him lose weight. I'm like, oh, is that a Maserati? He goes, phew. He probably, what do you drive? Oh, Nissan Sentra down at the pizza pit? Yeah, some of us have to make ends meet, dude.
I'll be like, can I touch your mom's? Ow, ow, can you help me touch it?
You would try to touch his six pack, I can assure
Mom,
you that.
Can I touch your six pack? Please. Can I touch it, please? Just one time. I touch it with my hand.
This guy doesn't sound like a very cool online person.
It turns girls on that I'm mysterious. I tell them I don't want nothing serious because even on a slow day, I can have a three-way chat with two women at one time. I'm so much cooler online. Yeah, I'm cooler online. When you got my kind of stats, it's hard to get a date, let alone a real girlfriend. Now, this one's resonating with you. But I grow another foot and I lose a bunch of weight every time I log in. Online, I'm out in Hollywood. I'm 6'5", and I look D good. I will not say it twice.
Oh. One cuss rule only be a quotation.
That's one.
That's a well-known
show.
Rule of the show. Look, one we don't make show. The rules. The one producers put them in the Slack.
Even on a slow day, I can have a three-way chat with two women at one time.
This is
kind of like that.
This That's is a it. Pretty intense message.
So it's cool because first of all, Brad's funny, and you need.
Yeah,
to understand
that was funny. That was funny. I agree.
And secondly, his wife was in a hit comedy with Steve Martin, starring Steve Martin, father of the bride. She was the bride.
Okay. So she was the main attraction.
Steve Martin was the main attraction.
Typical sexist Hollywood.
If you have not seen Father of the Bride 1, I recommend it. Father of the Bride 2, maybe a little bit better, but you got to see Father of the Bride 1 before you see Father of the Bride 2. And I think there's even a Father of the Bride 3.
I'm not going to watch.
We should look into that. You guys research that. See if there's a 3.
Can you imagine if, like, in 15 seconds from now, we get a buzz back in? Just a quick update. There is indeed a Father of the Bride 3. Yeah, it came out in 2004. It was really good. Rotten Tomatoes, not as high of a rating as the original or the second, but still, you know, a lot of people in the comments, they say it completes the trilogy. So.
All I'm saying is it's a comedic family.
It's a comedic family, yeah. Well, I got a bone to pick with the song. I don't like the message.
Okay.
You know, the true inspirational message, they come to Pizza Chris Rawl, they go, listen, buddy, things aren't going great for you right now. You know, you're a little bit overweight, you're driving around not a great car, working the old night shift, you know, living at home. You can change. Things can change, you know? That needs to be his inspirational message. Instead, he tries to do the funny man thing. He goes, oh, you're just always going to be a fat pizza guy your whole life. So the only way you could become cool is to create a fake online persona where you're from Malibu and drink wine, and then you have three-way chats with women. That's as high as you can aspire to be. That's what I'm hearing from the song.
If I ever had a three-way chat with a woman while in Malibu drinking wine, that would be the pinnacle of my life.
What's the dynamic of inviting two women? And I'm assuming both these, for the sake of this song, I'm assuming everybody's single on the site. They're doing this in a dating format. So he finds somebody who's somewhat interested.
First of all, it's three dudes. Let's get that out of the way. No one's
it's
woman.
It's three
in the
pizza boys. First one, Chris
Two
Rawl,
are
second.
Posing as women for sure. But
it's actually all pizza boys. You are correct. I realized my error after you said it. So we have three pizza boys. How do you go about convincing? You get the other pizza boy and you go, whoa, you're a strapping 6'5 Malibu karate master. You want to join this chat room with me? They go, well, I'd love to. You look pretty similar to me. We get in there. How do you get the third one into this, like, supposed dating realm? Like, let's say I'm on Tinder. And, you know, somebody through some miracle of events, they go, wow, I'd like to like with you. We get into a chat message forum, and I go,
oh, you can
thank
do
you
that?
Yeah, I go, so thank you so much for giving me the time. Could you just hold on 1 second? Next thing we know, a third person's there, another woman. And I go, I'd just like to let you both know I'm super interested in both of you. I don't even care who knows it. I really just want to attract somebody. I figured I'd cast a wide net and kill all the birds with one stone. So I gathered everybody who's shown interest in me on this website onto this chat. Are you guys feeling me? What do you think?
You know what this reminds me of? So in high school, I worked at a call center called Western Watts in Spanish Fork, Utah. And
but you were slim, dude. You were slim as hell.
I just goofed off, obviously. Would just screw around. I had the best numbers because I would just fill out the surveys myself. And they'd always be like, man, I wish everyone could be as
Game
good.
The system.
I wish everyone could be as good as Clint. They'd always be like, Clint, how do you do it? I literally just fill them out. What do I care?
It takes me 10 minutes to complete a day's worth of work.
And so this reminds me what you're saying, like this three-way chat thing. One time, I called two people at the same time. I conferenced them in. And I had a conversation with them. And one of the people was like, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm from Western Watts, but there's another guy here. He lives in Oregon.
Guess
you
what he's
live
doing?
In Missouri.
Were you like setting people up on dates?
We talked for 15 minutes about what was going on in the world.
You were a Western Watts matchmaker.
Just conferencing them in. Then I filled out both of their surveys, got those numbers. Got employee of the month.
Became quite good friends with them. Started going out on trips to Oregon. Found out that Mrs. Smith was actually a 15-year-old boy who worked at the local Little Caesars when you arrived.
You know what freaks me out is like back in the day, you could call people and they'd stay on the line
for a long amount of time.
They used to always stay on the line.
Oh, dude, if you called me, I'd talk for days. It didn't matter who it was. So if you called and were an actual pizza boy, you know. Hey, I'm the overweight pizza guy.
You've heard the Brad Paisley song.
And I go, no way. What kind of snack is that? I can hear you munching. Did your mom make that? Next thing you know, we're great friends. We're friends for life.
I like three-way chats.
That's the better message of the song. Exactly. You go, you know what? First of all, get into a chat, period. Second of all, don't be ashamed of getting into a three-way chat because you never know where it will head. You're living proof of this.
Mm-hmm. I've made two lifelong
you have
friends.
Two lifelong
one in Missouri, one in Oregon. And then me. 16-year-old me. Best numbers in the office.
Do you ever think what was going on in those two people's lives? That they're like, honey, could you get off the phone? Hold on. I'm on a conference call with a Western Watts kid and some guy in Missouri. Just give me 15 more minutes. Like, what was going on in their life that made them think they should stay on the line for so long?
I don't know. But speaking of inspiration and people who are inspiring and very cool, did you see this transition I'm doing?
Yes.
Kamel Green. Who is the CEO and founder of Poly, an amazing, amazing, amazing person. He played football at BYU. He played for Mike Leach at Washington State until he transferred to BYU.
Yeah, Kamel's sweet. He used to be an intern at Silicon Slopes, and we used to have football discussions.
Kamel, an amazing person. I sat down with him about Poly, his startup. But before we go to that interview and Silicon Slopes, a quick word from our sponsor, Chatbooks. Kamel, you're running a company, a startup company in the state of Utah. Right now, you've pulled over at a coffee shop somewhere in Idaho to take a meeting in Boise. You told me something crazy. I don't know what you were saying this meeting thing, but I'm glad that you prioritized the meeting in Boise over our interview. Let me say that, number one. That shows a true entrepreneur. That's a true startup founder right there. It's like, you know what? I'm going to go close a deal. I assume you're closing a deal here in a bit. And I forget the publicity, forget the fame, forget my good friend Clint. I'm going to close a deal. I love the spirit of that. How are you, my friend? How's the grind going?
Well, I'm doing great. I can't complain. Life has been a blessing for me. When you talk about the grind, man, it's been a grind ever since. I would say ever since I got in high school in Mountain View, California, in the Bay Area, and went through playing college football and stuff like that and got to Utah, the grind, it's a love-hate relationship. It reminds me of football, waking up, you know, sitting on your bed at 4:30 in the morning, sitting on the edge of it and saying, why am I doing this? And so I ask myself that every single day, but for some odd reason, I keep up. I keep getting up and waking up and I keep doing it. The grind is good. It's rough, but it's been awesome at the same time. It's afforded me a lot of opportunities, and the business is growing. So, in short, the grind is awesome, and I'm loving it.
What brought you to Utah?
Wow, man. That's a hard question. So, what brought me to Utah, it definitely wasn't something that was planned. However, it's been a blessing. So, initially, I played football under Mike Leach at Washington State University. And for those college fans, I'm sure they'll understand the uniqueness, I would say, in Mike Leach. He was the football coach. And after my first season, my second season, he fired our defensive staff. And those were the guys who recruited me. So going through the recruiting process, I wasn't able to necessarily transfer to anyone that was on Washington State's schedule for the next 5 years. I could transfer, but I would have had to sit out for two seasons. So BYU, me being someone that's interested in debate and academia and technology as well as sports, I thought BYU would afford all those opportunities for me. So BYU seemed like the best bet from a football standpoint. They were independent, so we weren't in the same ramifications in which Coach Leach had. So I ended up transferring to BYU. I know in the process, a lot of people said, "Hey, man, are you sure? Do you know what you're getting yourself into?" I went to a private high school, Catholic, and I was like, "Yeah, I mean, shoot, I can go to a private school, you know, LDS." I didn't know what it necessarily came with. I knew it was theologically different from what I stood for. But I got here, and so that's how I got here. Now we can talk on more of the process and me kind of understanding some of the culture to it and coming to a liking of the state of Utah and really loving the state of Utah. But that's how I ended up getting to the state of Utah in the first place.
So you said you kind of cut out the punchline there when you said, "And yeah, once you got here," what was it like once you got here? In all honesty, what was it like? I mean, what I'm asking, Kamel, is like, what was your first trip to the BYU Creamery like?
Right. Okay. So the first trip to the BYU Creamery, that was good in itself. But if you want the raw realities of how it was when I came from Washington State, being a Bay Arean, it was a culture shock. And you're going to get that cliche tone a lot. Everyone's going to say it was a culture shock. It was. However, for me, it wasn't necessarily too much. Like, obviously, me being a Black man, someone that went to a PWI, predominantly white institution, my whole life, it wasn't necessarily difficult in me trying to assimilate or assimilate. But really what it was the acculturation part of it that made things tough. It was getting, you know, sitting in a political science class at BYU and hearing specific ideologies and what people stood for and having to grasp that type of understanding, in which I've never had to deal with that before, and trying to come to grips with it, realize it, and then combat it. So it wasn't necessarily of like, "Hey, I'm in a new spot, it's a new place," you know, the same cliche which you get. I was ready for that. I was used to that. It was more over the ideological shift for me, which was more difficult.
And so, and you, go ahead.
It was good, but at the same time, it was rough.
So you finish your phenomenal football career at BYU, and what keeps you here? Why not go back to California? I'm talking about graduated. You get what I'm saying, right? Like, once you graduated, like, what kept you here rather than going back?
It was the opportunities and the people of the state of Utah. And to say the people, let me elaborate on that a little bit. I came to like Utah. I understand that Utah, just like any other place, is going to have its pros and cons. I feel like what makes Utah a little uniquely different is just it's a little more homogenous than most other states. However, the people are welcoming, and they seek to understand, right? And I think that's the difference in other places, other states that I've been to. And so when I was done with football, actually, in the process of playing football, I interned for New Skin. I interned for Heidemann Associates, a law firm. I also worked, interned at Seek. So I was already immersed into the community and having those opportunities and those people willing to give someone who did not necessarily have that experience, give me that experience. So by the time I graduated in December of 2017, mid-year, I've already had that under my belt. I was already in the Utah tech community just from the internships that was afforded to me. So when I was done, I actually went back to the Bay Area, you know, Christmas, and I was there. I'm from East Palo Alto, California, and I was there for a little bit, and I seen a lot of my friends, and I seen the opportunities that they had, and I was, you know, a lot of times, obviously, it's overpriced in the Bay Area. I would say, you know, it's just different, but there's a lot of opportunity in the state of Utah. So I ended up going back. You know, you hear that same story. I probably had about $15 in my pocket. I started interning for Seek for about a month, a little more, and then I ended up getting the opportunity to work at Weave, under Brandon Rodman at the time. And after that, it just took off from there. And, you know, Utah was the place where I said, it's a lot of opportunity. Why would I leave? And that's kind of why I stayed.
Tell us about Pauly. What is this company you're starting, and why are you starting it?
Yeah. So the company in itself is a enterprise series B2B SaaS platform. We work directly with municipalities as well as companies and schools. And what we do is we serve as an engagement platform. And so what Pauly affords, it affords a news forum, a mobile app in which people are subordinates in a sense, that being students, residents, and employees, can have a one-stop shop to know what's going on. And administrators can actually send those push notifications. They can have surveys, polling capability, but the main problem that it solves is it gives a voice to administrators, and it gives a one-stop shop for users. This whole conceptualization came about from when I actually started my college career at Washington State University. Like I said, I got there, I was in a debate, I was in entrepreneurship, but I was always relegated to just being a student athlete. And so I wanted to know what was available on campus, but I didn't know. And when I transferred to BYU is when I felt like that disconnect exacerbated. So at the time, I actually built a mobile app that, you know, consolidated all those activities and events onto one app. And then as I went back to get my graduate degree in public administration, that's when I was exposed more to the public sector. I ended up working for Eagle Mountain City. And I seen that it was a disconnect between the very premise of a city in which they have to communicate with residents. And I already lived through the disconnect of being a student and not knowing what's going on campus. And then seeing it from an administrative level, where administrators are like, man, we want a voice, but they don't. And the current solutions that they're using is Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You know, you can even throw Slack and email. However, everyone has a voice on those platforms. And what Pauly does is Pauly gives you that echo chamber in which you can now have a voice, which is funny because you can see a trend moving more towards echo chambers. But that's what Pauly does. It affords you a voice that sticks at the administrative level. And for users, they now are more connected with like-minded people and know what's going on within their community and organization.
Well, you're going to be unbelievably successful at Pauly, and I have no question that your career is going to be very fruitful. Here's the challenge I see you running into, Kamel, long term. And that is, you're an amazing public speaker. You're very gregarious. You care about the political issues. You care about the public sphere. Someone's going to convince you to run for office. You're going to run, you're going to win, and your life's going to be miserable.
Hopefully not. You know, I would say as far as the precedents and I would say the precedents and just how, you know, our latest commander in chief kind of changed the narrative of what a president can be. I would say hopefully, you know, by the time I get to that position, it's a new perspective in that light, I would say.
I'd vote for you is what I'm saying. I think it'd be great for everyone except for you. It seems like that job is terrible, but you would be an amazing leader there. You are an amazing leader. I'm so proud of you and what you're doing with Pauly. You actually interned with Silicon Slopes a little bit. You didn't mention us in your intern rundown, which is fine. Yeah. But, you know, that's where we first met.
So I didn't finish telling the story. And I really want to touch on that a lot more. So when I graduated from the MPA program, when I graduated undergrad, I ended up working for Weave for a little bit. And I worked for Weave for about 9 months. And that's when I was actually applying to a lot of different law schools. But that's when I started the app at the time. And I decided to, this is again, me seeing the value in the state of Utah. I turned down some law schools that I got into, and I got into the MPA program. And right in 2018, when I got into the MPA program, a friend of mine, Adam Pulsifer, who was also interning for Silicon Slope, said, hey, Mel, this is a place where I feel like you need to get involved in this ecosystem. You need to learn how things operate, get in touch, get in tune with what everything that's going on. He said, you should start here. So first day, as soon as he told me, I reached out, came to Silicon Slope's headquarters and got in a conversation with Garrett Clark. And right then and there, he didn't even look at my resume. He just said that he'd seen the grit and the grind, and he just afforded me the opportunity. And I think Silicon Slopes, without a doubt, and this is not just me saying this because, you know, the main guy of Silicon Slopes. It's in all reality, Silicon Slopes was served as a launching pad, a trajectory for everything, for a lot of the stuff that I have right now as far as Poly. If it wasn't for one, just learning it and seeing the operations and better understanding the ecosystem in the state of Utah and Silicon Slopes as a whole. And then secondly, the real world applicable experience that I learned from the tech summit, from just engaging with people, understanding how to operate within certain predicaments and parameters. And then in addition to that, the leverage network that was afforded to me as well. So without a doubt, you know, all the people who I've worked with and who I'm continually working with at Silicon Slopes was bigger than anything that I can even ask for. So I thank you for that. I thank Garrett Clark, everyone, you know, within the administration for that. But I still show up to Silicon Slopes about 3 days a week. So that's probably
yeah,
why
I love
it. Mentioned, because it's just so mainstream and normalized. Yeah, but it's been awesome for sure.
Playing ping pong, man, we get that going. Well, all of your success is yours. We played almost no role, I'm sure of it. I'm sure Garrett did nothing. I never want to give that guy credit, although he's an amazing human being and I love him like a brother. I love you as well. Thank you so much for coming on. We should check in with you every once in a while. You're on an interesting journey. You're at the beginning of
sure.
building this startup. You're hustling right now to the point where you had to pull over at a coffee house just to take this call, which I'm appreciative that you did. Thank you so much, my friend. Let's have you on again.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and hopefully we can close this deal here where we're going right now. We recently closed with Lehigh City, and that's been awesome, and we're working to close with some more cities in the state of Utah. So thank you, Clint, and the whole Silicon Slopes team, and thank you so much.
You'll close it, I have no doubt. See you around, my friend.
That's Kamel Green, the founder and CEO of Poly. He dropped off at a coffee shop to take that interview. How impressive is that?
That's way impressive.
What a good man.
I would never do that.
Yeah, of course you wouldn't.
I honestly refuse to take calls here at my desk.
Yeah.
It's actually not a joke.
Yeah. Kamel Green, you can watch the full interview at siliconslopes.tv. And now, Dear Utah. If you have a question or comment about Utah, email us at dearutah@thebeehive.com, Chris, or you can contact us on any of our social media accounts at TheBeehiveHQ using the hashtag DearUtah. There's also a way to leave us a voicemail, which we're going to get to tomorrow. We have some voicemails to get to.
Yes.
There's also a way to text us. We'll put that on our social media.
Voicemail's the best. I love voicemails.
Yeah, the voicemails are really, 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 really cool. All right, Kelly, what's our Dear Utah for the day?
So we got a tweet from Cygnus Maximus.
Heck yeah.
And
Cygnus.
He's wondering, Burgess Owens, misguided or menace?
Burgess Owens, misguided or menace? Burgess Owens.
Well, you came to the right spot for a take on Burgess Owens being misguided or a menace. Because as we all know, I dabble in political theater, as they say. So when I hear a question like that, I go, oh, yeah, I got a lot to say. I have no idea.
Burgess Owens.
I know. This is what I know about Burgess Owens. He went head-to-head against Ben McAdams.
Uh-huh.
And everybody thought Ben McAdams was going to win, and then he didn't win. And now Burgess Owens is something.
Burgess Owens.
That's what I know. No, I wasn't saying like, oh, we can't answer these questions. That's all I know.
Burgess Owens is a congressman for Utah's 4th district. He beat Ben McAdams in the most recent election. Ben McAdams was a Democrat. Burgess Owens is a Republican. Burgess Owens won a Super Bowl.
Did you know that? Well, yeah, I know.
You know Burgess Owens, the player.
I know Burgess Owens, the player.
Was he good?
No. Yeah, he's fine. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he was?
Yeah.
What did he play?
He played football.
No, what position did he play?
Played defensive back.
Cool. A good defensive back. Burgess Owens.
Burgess Owens, sure.
I don't know. Misguided or menace? I feel like if we get labeled either one of those are negative.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about him either.
Well, the options don't seem fair to the person.
Seems like a nice defensive back to me.
Should I pull up some stats from his playing days? I like the term menace in general. I think we should apply the label menace to people more often. Because menace is cool.
Yeah.
Menace is like, you know what you're doing, and it's super bad for everybody. And I don't just want to say, you're bad. You're a bad person. But I want to be like, you're kind of a menace to society. That's a good term.
Here's what we'll do, Cygnus Maximus, if that is your real name.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
You like that joke?
No, I don't even know what that means.
Here's what we'll do, Cygnus Maximus. We'll get Burgess Owens on the show, and okay. We'll ask him.
I like that. We're talking.
So Kelly, our producer, she will find Burgess Owens' contact information. Give him a call.
You can find
hey,
it
Burgess,
anyway.
You'll have a nice conversation about his defensive back stats. And then you're like, hey, you want to come on the show? Because Clint needs to ask you, on behalf of Cygnus Maximus, whether you're misguided or a menace. Here's what I know. A lot of people in Utah don't like Burgess Owens because he was a Donald Trump
supporter. How did he get voted in?
But a lot of people do like him because he was a Donald Trump supporter.
Mm, okay.
And so, I know.
If I came to you right now and I go, Clint Betts, I'm asking you a question. Are you misguided or are you a menace?
I'd say menace.
Had to choose one. Okay, you choose menace.
Well, misguided, you're an idiot.
Well,
I'd rather not be an idiot.
I would choose misguided. Again, it's the sheep thing. I go, I'm not in control. Find my shepherd, man.
I'd rather intentionally be...
Intentionally be evil than be so stupid that I could be led to believe
stupidly
something.
Stupidly evil. Yeah.
No. It's not stupidly evil. Misguided means you're just dumb. So then once you understand that you're dumb, you could go, I made a wrong decision. I'm ready to be good now. Menace. That's when you're going out of your way. You go, I am evil, and I'm going to show you how evil I am, and I know it the whole time. So misguided, there's a redemption story arc.
Yeah.
Menace, you are what you are.
It's fascinating, Cygnus Maximus, if that is your real name. Of all the politicians in Utah, Burgess Owens is the one I know the very least.
I thought you were going to say, Burgess Owens is the one who I'm closest friends with. We actually play pool every Saturday night.
I don't know him. I've talked to him once on the phone. I've never met him.
It's crazy. I've stopped for every politician in Utah. You know, we get together every Thursday morning. We go swim down to the local pool.
You know, the only thing I know about Burgess Owens is there was a story in the Salt Lake Tribune for some reason about Quinn Snyder donating to his campaign. It was super controversial. Yeah. For some reason.
I do know that too.
Like a friend of Quinn's. Like, how would anybody know what anybody's politics are? Insane.
I'll say this. This is my final point of the entire segment. I want to defend people who give money to anybody else that's their friend or not even their friend. Because if you actually went into my past and you said all the people that you've given $20 to, where it's just like, hey, can you spot me $20 real fast? They're all menaces. And so if the Salt Lake Tribune actually went in and goes, here's a list of 20 people that Chris has given money to, donated money to.
Yeah.
They're all terrible people. They've actually done bad things to the world. So at that point, I'm kind of financing it.
Who cares if Quinn Snyder gave money to Burgess Owens or not?
I do. I care.
Yeah, actually, I do.
Quinn Snyder, misguided.
Quinn Snyder, misguided or menace?
We should start playing a misguided or menace game on this show.
Okay, we have a commitment from Kelly to get Burgess Owens on the phone.
Yes.
We're going to have Burgess Owens on this show. That's the only politician I really have no take on in the state of Utah. He's too new. He hasn't been wrapped up in the old web yet. All right, that's the show. Signing off for Chris Raw, Kelly Jensen, and Weston Tanner. My name is Clint Betts, and this has been another episode of The Beehive.